You are very welcome along to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast, our first of 2025. Happy New Year, and we are straight into it this year with the Investec Champions Cup. Munster host Saracens on Saturday, live on RTÉ2 and RTÉ Player. Ulster away to Leicester Tigers on Saturday evening. Leinster and La Rochelle meet on Sunday. And then Connacht also in action in the Challenge Cup on Saturday evening. They host Leon at Dexcom Stadium. Bernard Jackman and Johnny Holland are with me. Happy New Year, fellas. Good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to see you.
We'll start on World Rugby's New Year's resolutions. Speeding up the game is the big one for them this year. Four law changes are in effect now in various competitions, including the Champions Cup and URC. To run through them, so it's a 60-second conversion limit down from 90 seconds, which will be managed by the shot clock. 30-second setup for lineouts, which is going to match scrums and hopefully reduce downtime. Referees on the pitch will be managing that one. Play on in uncontested lineouts when the throw is not straight, and more protection for the scrum half during scrums, rucks, and mauls. The main ones, Bernard, the shot clock for conversions, that looks after itself with a timer. Will the lineout timer actually be strictly enforced? Because as they write it out, it will match the 30-second shot clock in effect for scrums, which I don't think anyone believes there actually is one out there.
No, I think it's just a bit of a guide. I don't think we've seen that being refereed at scrums strictly anyway. And I'm sure, if team needs more lineout, the hooker would suddenly have a little shoulder injury and it'll all be stopped anyway. But it's the intent. The intent is there to quicken it up. To be honest, the huddles that we were seeing a couple of years ago have kind of drifted out of the game anyway. A lot of teams kind of walk in together with the loose head, normally just going to the hooker, and then the whole process starts. So, it's not a bad thing. I think probably in terms of actually impact on the game, it's the other two laws in terms of, the defensive team, if they don't go up in the air, the attacking team the ball can be skew. So it is going to be interesting how religiously teams try and get pods up to put pressure on the opposition hooker, obviously at source, but also in terms of keeping it straight. And then would that open up space a little bit further out for teams to attack? And then obviously the nines, I don't know if you saw the weekend, Capuazzo came on at scrum half for Toulouse again in an understrength team against La Rochelle. Will potentially that be that law give more more value to penalty running nines, which I think the nines have been getting a hard time. I think the ruck has been so messy, it's been incredibly difficult for them to play clean ball, and hopefully this will in some way go towards actually making it a little bit easier for nines to be attacking threats.
What of those laws intrigues you, Johnny? Is there anything you think that will actually have a proper effect on the game?
I think out halves can't celebrate anymore after tries because they're going to be busy trying to find the ball, trying to get the ball. I can't remember which game it was, but Kieran Frawley was saying to Sam Prendergast, go get the ball.
Fiji game. It was the Fiji game, yeah.
So you'll see more of that. I would say, that's tough on it halves. Like, to anyone who hasn't kicked the ball will say, just put the ball in the tee and kick it. And I think there's an element of that. I think there's a lot of long setups for out halves kicking at the moment. And it's funny, because when you're kicking, you think you have this process and everything else, but you see the ball dropping off a tee sometime and the fella just puts it down and bangs it over. And it's when you're kicking there, Cozzy used to be kicking coach with us, Ian Costello, and there was a warm-up drill where you just bang two balls, two or four balls, you just bang them over at the start and run through them. And sometimes you question yourself and go, why don't I just do that all the time? But it's more so the consistency, you need to have a process so that when the wind is blowing and you're out on a touchline, you need to keep it on this line and all that kind of stuff. But there is an element of, you have so many reps in the bank, most fellas can just put it on. I've actually seen lads throw it on the grass, tee gets lost, or someone isn't no tee because they weren't kicking and just stick it on the grass and thump it over. It's actually very interesting, the psychology behind it. But the one about the nines, if they actually left each other alone, they'd have enough protection. They fight with each other more than anyone. And I don't understand sometimes, we bring in these law focuses, I think you call them, because there never changes. The shot clocks are different, but protecting the nines, we always protected nines, yet we let it go loose and then it's a directive. So things like that, I kind of wonder, How much more protection can you give him at the ruck? I'm not sure. He just refereed the laws that are there anyway. But yeah, they're more. It's more so them pushing each other at scrums more than anything. So, and the other thing on the line out, the crooked one, I think would be interesting, as Bert said. Like,
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it'll change. If you think there's a hooker who's having a tough time, I think you'll put pads in the air all day because you'll get a couple of turnovers possibly with the crooked throws. But they went very hard on like no meetings before lineouts before, no huddles. And I remember coaching me like, you said no meetings, like, and there's just a meeting happening in front of you. And you'll see it for the first couple of weeks and then it'll just stop, like, won't it? You can't get away from shot clocks, but the other ones where there's no objective marker, it'll just change back.
Yeah, and I think like as we run through them, like Birch, the play on for uncontested lineouts is the when they're crooked. That definitely seems to be the one that has the potential to open up things so much more. Not just because you've got like probably more contests, well, potentially more contests at the lineout, but like remember like back in November when we were talking about the kick escort stuff, and there was a lot of talk around the unintended consequences, and the unintended consequence here is. More the unintended opportunity, I suppose, of less players clogging up the middle of the pitch and more space for people to attack if there's more pods going up in defensive lineouts.
Yeah, no, 100%, and that is something that's really positive, I think.
And sorry as well, I meant to say it's also like probably the most easily enforced of the things because a referee sees a crooked throw, he can just leave it go.
Yeah, and I think they want to get away from scrums as well, Neil. So there's some element to it to try and create a little bit more space out wide, but they don't want to get stuck in the same area of the field. So an off straight that's penalised becomes a scrum, and suddenly for if there's a reset, it could be 2.5 minutes in the same area. And so I think it's all about keeping the thing moving, and trying to get players fatigued as well, and obviously with fatigue comes space. So that's the thought process behind it. Obviously for the international coaches, they have 2 weeks to see it unfold in Europe, but for our provinces, they're straight into it. But it was interesting. I mean, we heard Nina Barr say after Claremont that they were already looking at this, that week, and trying to basically test drive it. So, again, might be an opportunity for some teams who are maybe a little bit out of form to hit the ground running with some creativity around the implementation of these.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see this weekend in particular. Before we get into this weekend's games, then, there is a Six Nations squad that's going to be announced this day next week, which means we probably will be needing to change our podcast plans, maybe do one a bit later in the day because of that. Positions that could be up for grabs, people sneaking in. Tom O'Toole is suspended. Obviously, Tadhg Furlong is still not back from his injury, although it looks like he's close. There's a scrum half spot available in the wider squad at the very least. James Lowe is still out, so there's probably an opportunity there for someone, a left winger, to make an impact. And unfortunately for Jacob Stockdale, he's still out injured as well. So definitely a potential for a lefty there. And the perennial loose head issue as well, which, funnily enough, someone over Christmas told me that nobody in the media is talking about this. I didn't know. I had to say sorry. I'm not sure you're actually engaging with any media whatsoever. But anyway, Johnny, what are the positions? Who are the players you think that could make a bit of an impact this weekend? Not even just guys to like to kind of put themselves into the frame for a starting spot, but guys who could be looking for an opportunity to just get into that wider squad or to be a training panelist, as we've seen Andy Farrell or now Simon Easterby, who will probably be doing it.
Yeah, I think you've kind of called it there in terms of opportunities. If you're a prop, and if you're a prop in Leinster, I think you'd probably be quite happy with your chances of getting into that wider squad or even a closer squad with Tom O'Toole and whatever is going on with Tadhg as well there. So Tadhg Furlong. So props, I think Jack Boyle, Thomas Clarkson will be there thereabouts again. I don't think you're going to see much change. Like, it's just going to be guys getting closer into the squad, I think, isn't it? And then the nine battle, I think we had an interesting conversation here a couple of weeks back, and there was conversation as a result on social media about our response to it. But again, like,
Was there? I missed that.
there was a little bit of what about our Connacht scrum halves, or and fair enough, Matthew Devine, like, because I think I was called a Leinster man at one stage, but I had to kind of nail my colours to the Cork mast there. But yeah, like I think there's an opportunity there, but I think the scrum half battle is funny because the guys who are going to step up into that position aren't actually being selected with their provinces, which is a kind of a funny, like, know John Cooney has been in and out with injury and stuff, but they're probably not going to select him. Caelan Blade hasn't really gone into that squad to any major capacity yet. He can be the one playing with Connacht, and because they're in the Challenge Cup, then maybe there is an opportunity for Matthew Devine to play there. I'm not sure what they're going to do with their selection, so that could be one. And then you don't think that, you know, Fintan Gunn is going to get into that Leinster squad, possibly on the bench. Who knows? Between him and Luke McGrath, so it just depends on the selections of the provinces. And then again, it might not depend on the selection of the provinces because of the Emerging Ireland Tour. We've seen that Ireland kind of do their own thing, and they have their own guys kind of marked out. So it's going to be difficult from that perspective. Like you said, props and scrum halves, and then I think the back five is just an interesting one. Like I'd love to see Tom O'Hearn being rewarded again. Like I just think he's such a freak athlete. But then again, you're dealing with the likes of Cian Prendergast and Cormac Kizzychuk, who've kind of been there anyway. So I think by the end of it, all you're really saying is that the Ireland squad doesn't really change a massive amount. I haven't really thought about that left winger one, by the way. So, Bert, I don't know, do something different on that. But yeah, there are my thoughts.
Yeah, I think Tom O'Hearn may a couple of big performances.
Tom O'Hearn for the left wing.
No, yeah, well, obviously in their shape, he plays. He ends up on the wing, and a couple of big games in Europe could. I'd say Cian Prendergast could be under a little bit of pressure from Tom O'Hearn. You know, obviously he has been in the squad consistently, but Kizzychuk got in November and got game time. Keane was quiet against Ulster. You know, it doesn't take a lot if you're in that fringe group for someone to come in, and Hearn would certainly have the bit between the teeth and see an opportunity there. And Keane obviously has a chance to hold his position with some big performances for Connacht, although it's in the Challenge Cup. I think Wilson, the tight head in Ulster, obviously he's a work in progress, but in terms of power and ball carrying, he's really interesting and not far off where kind of Tom O'Toole was a few years ago when Farrell picked him as a kind of a training player. And they kind of went, look, he has the raw ability to be an international prop. We just got to be patient with him and expose him to it. So, yeah, I think he'll come in, obviously. I think Furlong, I'd be surprised if Furlong doesn't play at least one round before the Six Nations. I mean, it wasn't a major hamstring tear. I mean, he's actually been out probably a lot longer than they expected. But you would imagine he should be ready to play in Europe over the next couple of weeks and then be fine for Six Nations. Clarkson did well in November in the minutes he got. Boyle obviously is now a starter for Leinster in interpro games, even if it's only 20 minutes. But no, he's obviously a little bit more exposure than he had. He was in there in November but didn't get game time. Apart from that, left wing, I don't know if you go back to, yeah, it's there's
Shane
no real.
Daly.
Jimmy O'Brien's form hasn't been amazing either. So yeah, there's no. We mightn't have a like for like James Lowe, Jacob Stockdale. You know what I mean? Left footer later. I don't think. Yeah, no one's jumping out at me at the moment anyway.
Would you be tempted? I'm absolutely spitballing an idea here, but well, if he isn't suspended, we might talk about that later on. Maybe Mac Hansen starting on a pushing over to the left wing like he did when he first came in for James Lowe in an Ireland squad, potentially putting Hugo Keenan out onto the right and bringing like a Jamie Osborne back to full back.
Yeah, I think that left-footed option, if you get carried away with having to have the left foot, then Jamie Osborne has to come into it, you know, and that might move Hugo Keenan around. I actually thought about the Leinster selection impacting this as well. I don't think it's going to impact Hugo Keenan from an Irish perspective, really. But like when you think about, you might get into it in a minute, the Leinster selection, I can't wait for them to have James Lowe back in on top of that and see what Leo and his crew are doing. Like, but if you are playing Ringrose and Henshaw in the centre, then maybe Jordy Barrett's gone to full back and Hugh Keenan doesn't get back in yet. And Kieran Frawley may or may not even make the bench because you might stick with Ross Byrne because Jordy Barrett can cover the centres and Hugh Keenan cover full back from the bench. So like it'd be very interesting to see what they do to get their Irish internationals back into that fold with Jamie Osborne in the mix there as well and the left footed option. You know, we've been so stuck to the left footed wing or the left footed left winger, you know, but as I said there, we just might not have that option. So You might just get two wingers that aren't left-footed, and it could be Calvin Ash and Mac Hansen. It could be Hugo Keenan back over there with Jamie Osborne at full-back. So you just don't know at the moment, do you?
Bernard, how do you see that? Like specifically on Leinster, if we move the conversation towards them and La Rochelle this weekend, like the return of Keenan, the return of Frawley, there's a lot of options now all of a sudden. This injury list that they had has eased up quite a bit, and Leo Cullen now has a proper selection headache.
He does. I think you'll see Barrett back on the bench. I think if Leinster's Irish internationals are fit, that it'll be him and RG will be used as impact players off the bench. Obviously, Hugo, if he's fit, it'd be interesting. I think Leinster will want to play him. They'll want to get him back in the team. And we'll, if those lads who were told, are fit for selections. They stay fit for selection. Leo Cullen and Nina Barr have some headache to try and get them all because they all want to play European games. They all want to play, obviously, this game. So this
Like,
is probably
this is,
more.
Jordy Barrett came to Leinster to play in the Champions Cup. Let's be honest.
Against
Yeah,
the
and he will
likes of La
play. It's just
Rochelle.
whether he starts or not.
It's the La Rochelle games. It's the big French powerhouses that we're talking about. The top European teams. That's why it's so interesting. I think the comments around RG Snyman and Irish preference and stuff like that. I can see him coming off the bench, no issue. But with the way Jordy Barrett's been playing, he's doing everything for them. So hard to leave him on the bench, isn't it? Even though I know there might be a directive or an unwritten rule or whatever it is, and it's probably even as a coach you go to him, look, I've given you a right crack here, and I need to get these lads back in, blah blah blah. That was the agreement, but so hard if you're looking to win that game away from home to leave a Jordy Barrett on the bench, like. And actually, you did mention before you go away from that conversation, Shane Daly. I think if he's in the form that he's in and not able to get back into the Irish squad, then he's not getting back into the Irish squad because I think he's so good and versatile. And he's been in that squad before. Is there a way back in for him?
Yeah, and I suppose even for players like that, even it's a case of just being in the wider squad as much as being in the team itself. But bring it back then to La Rochelle and Leinster this weekend. Just like the overall La Rochelle Leinster rivalry, it has just been like probably the highlight of the tournament over the last 4 or 5 years. You look back for 4 seasons in a row, one of those teams has knocked the other out of the or ended the other team's competition either in a final or a semi-final or a quarter-final. It has just been absolutely brilliant. It is, a true blue Leinsterman, Leo Cullen against, Ron Nogara of Munster, which, kind of frames the conversation a little bit differently from an Irish point of view. It's probably why we get so much more into it as well. It just has been a brilliant rivalry over these last few years, Bernard, and you just hope you see something along those lines again this weekend.
No, 100%. It's one of the best games. It's the best game for me for this weekend. And regardless of whether La Rochelle are in form or not, I don't think it matters. I think we all expect them to rise to this challenge. And yeah, it's and the Leo Raj, the rivalry there. The fact that Raj's been able to outfox them, in the big games. Obviously, Leinster have won the last two, but. There's always that jeopardy. There's that jeopardy that's not there most weeks for Leinster, to be fair. And yeah, also I think Rog is someone who's not afraid to change his game plan slightly to try and take strength away from an opposition. So how he sets up to play Leinster will be very, very interesting.
And Johnny, like it, you reminded me last night of when they were down in Cork last week, really riling everyone up. I remember Leo Cullen was referring to the Cork Mafia as well at one point that week. And like the fact that O'Gara is there has just kind of brought this extra little narrative to the whole thing over the years.
Yeah, there's a weird extra niggle, isn't there? Like, people love to get after the whole Raj thing, and it's such a moot point in one sense. But at the same time, I think because of his ability, as Bert said, to think outside the box or come with a plan, that's what puts you on edge when you're up against a coach that has the tools. I suppose I spoke to him about, it's not they're conversations away from a podcast, but like he just talking about the level of player that they have. And it comes down to recruitment, when you're getting to the top end of European rugby, like it comes down to the horses that you have. And if he wants to do something to upset a team of any level, Leinster at their best, even though I don't think they're at their best yet, but they're trending that way. He's the kind of guy that can just catch you on a one-off, even if they're not in form. And La Rochelle not in form is still a very big, powerful side, so I just do have a little bit of fear that they're not trending the right direction. They struggled against Toulouse in a very changed team last week. Despite going well actually in Europe, they're kind of a bit like Northampton in that sense. Their league form hasn't been great, but in Europe they've been very good. So he has a special ability to just turn it on for this week. The way when I was in Munster and I wasn't playing European games, but you just got this weird feeling around European games. A different kit. You got a different kit for European games. It was a different color. You knew something was going on. And he seems to have brought that to La Rochelle. Something goes on in European weeks, and that's the fear for Leinster. I think that he has brought that kind of special Irish club province narrative into French rugby, which is dangerous. Like, you know, so if he comes up with something that will upset them and get them out of their rhythm, it's more so the fear that he can do that. It'll be on their minds all week, and maybe it'll sharpen Leinster's kind of minds as well. But they've, like Birch has said there, they've had the they hockeyed them last time out, and they went to La Rochelle and weren't afraid of them. Wasn't it Ross Byrne that led them that day as well? So I don't think they'll have no fear, but Raj can have a trick up his sleeve, right?
And that's the part that's like that leads me nicely into something we were talking about last week, Birch. Like the idea of Raj having a trick up his sleeve or always coming with a plan. And we had a good conversation last week around Leinster's discipline and how we've been talking about how it's been a real kind of point against them over the last month or so. But kind of actually, are they relatively content to have that high penalty count and push the boundaries of referees and push the limits and trust their defence to actually hold out? And I remember you kind of raised the point, well, will be interesting to see how La Rochelle, excuse me, approach it if they get a similarly high penalty count against Leinster this weekend. Do they start kicking for posts a bit more, tagging on the three pointers? That's something I'm really looking forward to seeing this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if they do kick to the corner, will they be aggressive and pull it 5 meters out? And then will they be able to squeeze Leinster? I mean, Munster went to the corner, and to be fair, threw everything at Leinster, but just little inaccuracies, and it took about they got 1 out of 5 in terms of converting that into a try, and that's not good enough. Whereas La Rochelle, to be fair, with the ball carriers they have, they may be able to convert one or two, well, two of them, 2 out of 5, and that could be the difference if they can, I suppose, put a clamp on Leinster's attacking game, which statistically is still as good as it was last year, but doesn't look as good at the moment. But obviously, Leinster are conceding less points than they have been. So, we saw La Rochelle win with a last minute kick at the weekend against Toulouse, which I think is the perfect result for O'Gara because they underperformed. You know, it was a second string to lose side, but they found a way to win at the end with a clock in the red, and Hasloy kicked a great penalty. So I think they'll take points. I think they won't be afraid to take points, and the fact Leinster are giving up so many penalties will be one of the things that Rog will speak about this week, about if we're in the right area of the field. And particularly it might be worse for Leinster because the refereeing in the URC does allow quite a bit of disruption at the breakdown. And Leinster are still giving away penalties. And there could be just a little bit of focus this week across Europe that may bring them from 15 or 16 to 18, 19. And that could be the difference between winning and losing. But there's a bit of talk coming out at Leinster at the moment that the team that gives away the most penalties and passes the ball least amount tend to win. And while
Sorry,
I'm
say that again. So
but as a
you
stat, there's
gives
a talk,
away.
I've heard it said around Donnybrook from that the team who give away the most penalties and pass the ball least tend to win, right? So there's obviously a statistic that shows that's and I'm not saying that Leinster are chasing that at all, but I'm saying that at the moment I don't think they're overly worried about some of the penalties they're giving away. I don't think they expect to be under 10 because of how disruptive they're trying to be. And whether that can continue to work as you go and play bigger and better teams, that's what's intriguing. I'm not, just to be clear, I'm not saying that Leinster have that model themselves as a motto, but it's certainly maybe our way of thinking about discipline isn't necessarily backed up by the stats in terms of wins at the highest level.
Yeah, and actually, an example I'd always try point out for something like that is when these two teams played in the final in Marseille in 2022, and I remember in the lead up to that game and after the match as well, O'Gara was stressing that the way to beat Leinster is stopping them from scoring tries and limiting the amount of tries you're conceding against Leinster. And it was really interesting to see just how many penalties La Rochelle were conceding in the kind of middle 15 minutes or middle 15 meters of the pitch, kind of 30 meters out from the post. Basically, just handing Leinster invites to kick for the post all afternoon. And as soon as the game got over towards the tram tracks down by the sidelines, their discipline was squeaky clean, and they were not giving away anything, and they were not giving Leinster an invitation to go down into that corner. They were just handing them invites to take 3 points off the posts all day. And I don't know, Johnny, like from a coaching point of view, is that something you ever kind of think about, where certain parts of the pitch go for it, go a little bit harder, push the boundaries a little bit, but do you want to be inviting teams to kick down into the corner?
You do talk about different areas of the pitch, like when teams have certain pods that gain momentum, or when they get into wide areas and obviously they don't resource it as much because they don't have pods of three forwards out there. Then you can go after breakdowns out there, but it's not so much from a discipline perspective. You don't think like, let's go after it and be a bit more, let's toe the line a small bit more here and not there because we can get away. Well, I don't do that anyway, but whether coaches that are much more experienced and smarter than me can do that, I'm not sure. But I think the when you look at a stat like that, more penalties and you win games, I think it's kind of like reverse engineering in a small way, because teams like La Rochelle and Leinster will beat teams by giving away more penalties. Teams like Munster won't beat teams by giving away penalties, So Leinster will get away with that against Munster. They'll get away with it against most teams. So then all of a sudden, the stat becomes the team that gives away the most penalties can win games. But when you get to the top tier of European rugby, that's what you'll see this weekend, whether that stat holds true or not, because Leinster have the firepower to keep most teams out, whereas they might not have the firepower. And what Bert said there about La Rochelle kicking their points, most teams are afraid to kick points against Leinster because you only get so many opportunities that they think they need to score tries, and kind of double down. Maybe that's what Munster were doing, because if you get out of their territory with only 3 points, they go and get a 7-pointer, so. La Rochelle, I think, are a type of team, and Toulouse, obviously, if we get later on in the competition, hopefully, are a team that can go 3, 6, and 9, because they'll be able to stop one of those entries and get back up the pitch and get another three and maybe get their seven eventually, I do think that they'll pick off a couple of penalties to just make Leinster play a small bit more if they get that opportunity. And then they do have the firepower to be able to maybe stop those opportunities on the other end. And Leinster aren't actually scoring the points that they were scoring. So if you can get a small lead on them and make them play, then maybe that's the tactic. But I think the breakdown itself is going to be the winning. I know that's such a cliche, but like in this game in particular, Leinster are so barely legal, if you even want to call it that, at the breakdown. So the refereeing will be interesting. But La Rochelle were so poor at the breakdown last week. Toulouse second string, if that's what they were, really disrupted them. So if Toulouse can do that without the players that Leinster will have on the pitch, I'm sure Leinster will destroy that breakdown as well, and La Rochelle could become a very blunt instrument, So the breakdown will be hugely important, especially seeing how it's been reffed.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. That is going to be Sunday afternoon at Stade Marcel de Flandre. Live commentary on RT Radio 1 as well on Sunday Sport. Munster and Saracens then, excuse me, 5:30 p.m. kickoff on Saturday evening. Really finely balanced, this one, Birch, because like where Munster are at the moment, 6 points through two games, like it's a reasonable enough total at the moment. They're pretty much qualified with a win. But then the flip side is, if they do lose this weekend, they are going away to Northampton in a high pressure situation, probably needing to pick up something. Like, the last thing you want to be doing is heading over to Franklin's Gardens next week, needing to get a result.
100%. I actually, Northampton are shaping up pretty nicely. I know they haven't been incredibly consistent, but you'd fancy them. Their win away to the Bulls was very, very impressive. And they've, they've rebuilt their team, obviously losing guys like Courtney Laws and Dan Biggar over the last couple of years, and found, homegrown replacements. So they're in a good place. So 100%, Munster will be looking to get this done this weekend. And Saracens are a hard team to really read. I mean, they got smashed by Bath over Christmas, but then were very good against Bristol Bears at the weekend. And Tom Willis, their number eight, is on fire. And yeah, Rhys Carey is giving him a lot of carry, and that's a little bit where I fear for Munster is just that close in power game that Saris have have a very well drilled forward pack, and they don't play like Saracens of old. They're not a team that are, you know, box kicking and squeezing you, but they're capable of being very, very physical as well. Good 10, Fergus Burke, the Kiwi, who apparently now is on the radar of Scotland. Mark McCall signed him because he was EQP, English qualified.
He was linked to Irish teams last year as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, but the latest report I read was that he only qualifies for three countries: Scotland because of his grandfather, England because of his mother, and then New Zealand where he grew up. But there certainly was being linked to Ireland. Obviously, Burke,
We just assumed he was Irish
soon, yeah,
qualified.
soon. But yeah, he's been linked to Scotland's Gregor Townsend squad next week, due to some injuries there. But he's a good player. He's a good player. And then they still have like likes of Elliot Daly, who's actually still playing very well, even though he's not involved in the international setup anymore. Nick Tompkins. So it's a good test for Munster. It's a really good test for them. Probably like Stad are having a very poor season, so we can't read too much into that win. Cast obviously was a messy game. This is a litmus test of where Munster are now, because everything is settled down, you know, post Roundtree. And this is a European game, players are rested. Yeah, hopefully you see the best side of Munster.
Johnny Bernard spoke there about like the close in encounters, like Rhys Carey doing a lot of carries, the power stuff, and that was one of the big issues that jumped out from the Leinster match, particularly when Munster had that slew of 5 meter tap and go penalties just before and just after half time as well. Mike Prendergast was speaking about it last night. Ian Costello spoke about it after the game against Leinster as well, immediately afterwards. Like this is. For them, this seems to be the big issue now at the moment. It is converting chances. As Prendergast said yesterday, the biggest development he's seen since he came to Munster 2.5 years ago now is they are creating so many more chances than they were kind of early on in that tenure. But the issue is they're still not converting enough of them. And one of the interesting things that Costello said after the game against Leinster is the realization that they probably have to be a bit more creative with what they're doing around that kind of 5 meter tap and go stuff, that they're not really, not even just threatening teams physically there, but not even just not threatening teams mentally and making them think a little bit more and trying something outside the box. Like it seems to have been something for a few years now that I think really that the way Munster approached those 5 meter tap and go penalties and their conversion rate off them in bigger games, I suppose, against the better teams is poor enough.
Yeah, I was surprised against Leinster that they just went with a straight up carry, like, you know, and it was no scandal carrying, and then we saw
You see so few of that these days. Like other teams are getting so creative with the stuff they're doing around that.
yeah, it surprises you with Mike Prendergast as well, because he's a very creative coach. So I don't really know what they were trying to get with their just straight carries and doing it repeatedly as well. You know, there was no plan B, there was no. It didn't seem like there was a setup to do something else on the next one. I was kind of surprised by that, because then when you look at Leinster and they had won and scored after two phases, just put bodies together, and they can have enough creative ones, to be fair. We see enough creative ones in the Premiership as well, that they do exist. But you know, you spend it's funny, like you spend half your week. We don't really do a lot of it at AIA level, because it takes a lot of practice and you don't have that much time for us, like, but those teams do. And it did surprise me they didn't have much. But Munster's way, and it has been for a while, is like in that 22, you just beat teams around the corner with numbers and bodies on their feet, and you pick off little soft edges, and you clear the breakdown in a certain way that you create these little chances. But obviously, if a team is going to be more powerful than you and they can hit you back, and you have to restart, it's the restarting is hard, because you don't have the dynamic ball carrying or straight up power to just kind of get you back on the front foot. So when you get a good launch off the set piece, which has been a struggle for them at times, if you get a good launch, you're on the front foot. It doesn't really matter how powerful a team are. If you can get quick ball from the breakdown and get bodies together. The big thing with 22 meter attack is that you don't have to miss tackles to score tries or to concede tries. So if you can get an early latch and a secondary latch post contact, it's three bodies on how many can you tackle at once, like two, one to two. So if you can get bodies together, you will start nudging forward, and it just takes patience to score. But when you don't get forward, or you get nudged back and you have to restart, your backs do have to kind of try something, or you know, those balls at the back, or a little kind of, you see nines about to throw it to a forward pod and they just flick it out the back for a different carry and an outside edge. So we probably do need to see a small bit more of that from Munster, because like we trained against them 2 seasons ago with Conn, and obviously it's amateur versus professional, but their speed and intent in that 22 is very obvious. But when you're coming up against another pro team with big bodies, especially the likes of Saracens, then yeah, you probably do need to get a bit more creative. But once you need to get more creative in those areas, it just starts to feel a little bit like what Connacht have set themselves up with for the last couple of years, where they do have to be a bit more creative, because again, they don't have the punch. Even though their attack is very good, Birch, isn't it? You might get some kickback on that, but but it's creative attack, and Munster feel like that out the pitch. They're creating a lot to get in there, but then they don't have the punch to maybe get over the line, and it's hard to be creative in the 22.
Yeah, and like, would you say then that like their focus, I suppose, with those tap and go penalties, or just when they are very, very close to the line, it's more about quick ball and getting around the corners rather than doing something elaborate to pull a defence apart. Like, obviously, there's two ways to go about it. I'm not saying one is wrong, but obviously, they're just not executing it that way. But would you say that's the focus for them? It's just securing that ball quickly.
Sometimes just get the ball back and play, isn't it? Because like teams are very happy with their 5 meter attack, 5 to 7 meters. So sometimes you just get the ball back into play, get 3 meters from the line, and go again. Other teams like Bristol, maybe there's always, and Leinster have done it a lot, will have a two phase that they want to score in, you know, and they do probably. But yeah, sometimes you feel like you've kind of maybe you don't have the set piece, or you've been pretty good in the 22 meter attack. They just go nothing fancy that can cause a knock on or a bit of disruption. Get the ball back and play, and get back around the corner and see if you can outwork them. And that feels like the only way Munster were doing it at the moment without actually getting the rewards for outworking or outpowering teams.
Birch, what do you think they need to be doing a bit more of in that area?
Yeah, no, they definitely don't want to be too focused on just one out carries. When you see teams who have more power than them actually having an array of different trick plays and I suppose plans to create space or to run out weak defenders or weak shoulders. So yeah, maybe it's just a Christmas period. They prioritize other things, you know. But I think now with obviously that weekend off, and Saracens have a bit of punch, I would expect Munster to be a bit more creative there. I think they have added a lot of options to their attack. It was just that close in stuff was a little bit surprising against Leinster, where they were one dimensional.
They did have they had one or two options like last season where Gavin Coombe slipped down the shorts and then
Yeah, they've done it in the past. It's just
yeah.
yeah.
And like you're probably right, it just wasn't prioritized, and all of a sudden you're in a game where you need to have a
Yeah.
quick
Lots of
tap.
them.
Yeah, you just go with it, like yeah.
I'm curious to see overall, Birch, kind of how they approach this game this weekend, because while they took a bit of a stuffing on the scoreline against Leinster on the 27th, like when you look back at it, we were saying it last week, it wasn't a bad Munster performance by any stretch of the imagination. Leinster were really, really clinical. Where Munster struggled was converting their try scoring opportunities. And I got the sense yesterday, I was on Munster's media call with Mike Prendergast and Tom Hearn and Tom Farrell, that they haven't, you know, their confidence hasn't been hugely rocked by that defeat to Leinster, and they, you know, they've been picking out the positives of what they did. It's just going to be interesting to see with the week off. Has that been a help or a hindrance, I suppose?
Yeah, I think it's really important that they don't let their heads drop,
Mm.
because I thought it wasn't a lackluster performance in terms of effort at all. The
Yeah.
only challenge and worry I would have is sometimes when you actually empty yourself like Munster did, and you're still quite far away from an opponent, it can give you a bit of a knock. But I think what Prendergast and Costello's job would have been to do is to show them, you know, where. Just a little bit more composure, better shot selection at key moments that could have actually hurt Leinster, and that's obviously the way they need to, and then freshen up because emotionally for them, I mean, you know, post Graham, you know, they didn't have a huge amount of time off with that New Zealand A game, then into must win Lions, must win URC game, obviously one at home against Stade. Cass game was difficult because it was a game they probably should have won, and then obviously, and then the pros over Christmas, but they got 5 points up in Ravenhill, which was massive for them. So they're not in a bad place at all, but they'd like to get a little bit of momentum now, and particularly for a team who have reached such high standards in Europe since this competition started, they'd like to be knocking around the knockout stages again. So Saturday's is a huge game for them, and hopefully. Hopefully they can put in a performance that will kickstart their 2025.
Yeah, never mind even just getting through to the knockout stages. I think they want to start getting a home knockout game at some point in the not too distant future as well. And that starts with a decent win this weekend. Final point on Munster, something that just kind of popped up in the last couple of days. Jeremy Davidson left Cass with immediate effect now. He got early release from his contract when he was meant to be leaving at the end of the season. Like, I'm absolutely spitballing an idea, but is he someone that Munster should be interested to get in the building? I know, like, never mind a head coach vacancy, there's also a forwards coach vacancy in there.
I don't know is the real answer. I wouldn't know enough to answer that one, so I don't know. But it feels like they're waiting for something a bit
We need to
bigger.
start a rumor, guys. We need to start a
Yeah,
rumor
you've started.
here.
It's already out there now. It always looks funny when there's a sudden end to a contract. It looks like there's something happening, but I actually don't know.
Yeah, well, I
Yeah,
mean,
I
with
think.
him, it
Look,
was
I.
just with him, it was
Yeah.
just the writing was on the, he knew they were replacing him at the end of the season, so obviously, just kind of the lame duck syndrome decided to leave early.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's probably a smart thing to do because there may be an opportunity in France, like so. Example, so Lyon were looking for somebody just before Christmas, and he was on their shortlist, but he wasn't available, and they gave it to a guy called Karim Gazelle, who had
That's
left
bad.
Stade Francais, who left Stade Francais, but his background was Lyon, but like there was a lot of people in Lyon who weren't sure that they wanted to go back to Gazelle. But and Jeremy was certainly a live candidate for the summer, if and still is probably if Karim doesn't keep the club up, but just because of relegation promotion, it's far more likely to. I know we had Graham Rowntree departing mid-season, but in France there's a bigger chance that a club will need somebody in February, and Jeremy now will be available to take that, and that could be a 4 month contract with a view to extending and staying there for 2 or 3 years. If not, he goes into the pot of all the other coaches who are coming off contract in June, and it's a more difficult job. So the fact that he's available now because of his, I actually don't think he'll come back to Ireland short term. I think his next gig will be another gig in France. He's well got in France, has built up a lot of experience, probably more of a. Probably seen more now as a head man rather than being going back to being a forwards coach, to be honest. I mean, what he did in Aurillac, with a very small budget, has certainly impressed a lot of clubs and a lot of presidents in France. And even his job at Cast has been far from a failure. So I wouldn't be surprised if over the next couple of seasons you see someone like Tucker go back to Munster. If that relationship in Connacht ends, he might be someone that Munster look at, obviously with strong background in Munster rugby, and doing well as a coach in Connacht. And I look at obviously maybe they won't need that. Like Sean Cronin is helping out, I understand at the moment, and Alex Codling is in looking after lineouts, but we know that's short term. So I suppose that I'd imagine what they're waiting to do is to finalize Prendergast or not, and then from there you'll start to see the piece of the jigsaw fall into place.
Right. Well, your mention of Cully Tucker is a perfect segue into the next line of questioning I had, which is around Connacht and Mark Sexton leaving at the end of the season. And the reason I mentioned Tucker as well is because his name was floated in a couple of those news stories as well as being linked with a move to Munster. Now, Pete Wilkins said that Tucker's under contract till 2026 and he doesn't expect any other coaches to be leaving at the end of this season. But on Mark Sexton leaving Connacht at the end of this season, Johnny, reports are suggesting that it's going to be Ulster where he's heading. We'll probably find out in the next few days or weeks when they confirm that. But like, it's a frustrating and familiar kind of a situation that Connacht have been in now, where they develop Mossy Lawler as this really, really exciting coach, and he goes back to Munster. They develop Mark Sexton from he was in there as an elite player development officer and working with the academy, and he comes through as attack coach, and now he's more than likely going to Ulster. Well, he's leaving at the very least. There's talk around Colm Tucker potentially leaving. They've lost others down the years, like even people to outside Ireland, like just Andy Friend going back home, Dhaval Senekal. Year on year, they seem to be having to rebuild their coaching ticket. And I'm going to use the example. I'm going to give a bit of a straw man here. If Munster were constantly losing coaches to other provinces, there would be pitchforks outside the IRFU tomorrow morning.
No, you're right. I think it's very damaging for the Connacht's kind of integrity and brand and recruitment and getting away from them being the fourth province, like, because I don't think they have been that. And I think it's because of, like, we saw the Robbie Henshaw one with Leinster, and it was, I thought that was that took a while to get them back into a strong recruitment position. I felt, you know, where bigger players are trying to get there. And I think they've done well. Like Bundiaki has been a really strong advocate of the whole Connacht thing, you know, him staying there despite interest from other places. I don't know the details of any of that, but like the fact that he is still there, I think strengthened them. And then Andy Friend really kind of brought them on, I thought, from a coaching perspective. And they're in a, you know, I know they're in a tough league position, but Irish provinces are, like, you know, and I don't think they're in a bad place at all. I thought they got quite exciting. Their attacking brand is really good. I know, like, you'd argue they're 13th, but Bert, you've said it, and I think they're like first in offload, second in clean breaks, defenders beaten, and all this kind of crack. Like they're creating something. If they can keep the band together, like that's the whole thing. If they can keep it together and strengthen it, they become a very serious prospect. Like, and they've threatened. Obviously, they've won a league and all in the middle of that. Like, so they're definitely not Ireland's fourth province the way it used to be. Like, and Mark Sexton leaving now, I think, just starts to put a small bit of doubt into that again. If a coach is leaving one province for another, I just think that's it's tough for them. If you were one of their supporters, you'd be thinking, why would you go to Ulster instead of being with us? Like, if that's true, you know, you're kind of thinking, do we not offer enough? Are we not threatening enough? We have the players, we have, you know, there's something building there, and I think that is a small bit damaging.
And I'm like, I'll contradict my own argument here as well, Bernard. But you know, if I'm saying the IRFU need to be doing more about it, ultimately, if Mark Sexton wants to go to a different province, you know, is it the IRFU's responsibility to say to him, no, you have to stay there, and you know, and build something with Connacht? These are personal decisions at the same time as well. What actually can be done to keep this band together?
I think, yeah, 100%. The IRFU can't be, or shouldn't be telling coaches where they should go. Likewise with players. Likewise with players. I mean, you know, any feelings I have around the spreading around the players, it's only if that makes sense for the player, and it's a more attractive proposition for them. Not financially, but in terms of the opportunity to go and play for a province that they believe in. I think that's the challenge is, and the reality is the writing was on the wall for Connacht season this season, in my opinion, by their squad retention recruitment for this year, you know, and like it was always going to be hard. And I can see that they have young talent that they want to bring through. But there was a lot of experience players left last summer, which was always going to make it hard. Harder. Now I thought the Challenge Cup, and may still prove to be the point of the Challenge Cup and the benefit of playing in that, can help them have a stronger end of season than they've had over the last couple of years and get back into the Champions Cup. But at the moment, it doesn't look great for them for that, you know. And I don't think they're going to win a Challenge Cup either. So I think you'll find the 2026 for Colin Tucker thing is just interesting because you said it. And I'm not saying that Colin Tucker's going to Munster. I'm just saying he's probably someone that I think he's someone, and I know Connacht are in 13th, but I think there's a lot of people from the outside who look at some of the elements under his control. And certainly the feedback from players who work with him is that he's a very good technical coach, you know. And I think coaches and players will stay if they believe the project is exciting and has potential. And I'm not saying that that's why I know nothing about why Sexton's leaving, but that's the challenge is I think, you know, if you're an ambitious coach or player and you look and you go, do I want to spend the next 3 or 4 years in the Challenge Cup or, you know, outside the playoffs for the URC? Most will say that's not really why I want to be a pro rugby player. You know, that's the reality of it. Now, the other Connacht fans will say, well, it's up to them to change that. You know what I mean? It's up to them, the players and coaches, to change that. But I might be a bit cynical, but I think it's not just effort. It's you need the talent across a squad. And we know Connacht aren't going to have the same tools as Leinster or Munster or Ulster. But I just think that they lost a lot of experience in 1 year. And it's tough at the moment. It's tough at the moment for them. And look at the performance. They're better than they were against Ulster. But that's them. That's the performance in our mind, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a tough circle to square, and we'll see how things develop over the next little while. We will move on to Ulster because we are running out of time. Ulster away to Leicester Tigers this Saturday evening. Gonna be interesting to see what Ulster do this weekend here, Bernard, because obviously two defeats from two in the Champions Cup. They got that good win against Connacht on over Christmas, which kind of steadies the ship a little bit in terms of URC. Will be really interesting to see, do they go second string this weekend against Leicester, put all those eggs into the URC basket, or do they go over this weekend and try have a big crack at getting a win, which puts them right back in with a shout of making it to the knockout stage. Interesting to see what way they do it.
No, I think they need to just put all their eggs in the URC basket. Obviously, because of their seeding, they ran into a very tough group. And you know, to lose in Bordeaux away, your first two games were incredibly hard. It's another difficult fixture. And you know, Richie was able to suffer big defeats in the first two rounds and be able to be very competitive against Munster and win in Connacht. So they've already gone through that, you know. They've gone through that. So I would be resting up players for next week, and then obviously look to bounce out of that and get another win in the URC. And yeah, there's no benefit for me to go full strength against Leicester and not getting a win.
Yeah, and I'd like Leicester look very beatable. I was over there on Saturday for their game against Exeter. Myself and a few friends, I took a little bit of a busman's holiday, a proper scouting mission where I got to see Ulster's next two opponents on Saturday afternoon, Leicester and Exeter, and then we went down to Northampton and Bath, who are next week's opponents for Munster and Leinster. So I took a little bit of a busman's holiday in that regard. But both Leicester and Exeter were not good last weekend. It was an absolute dud of a game. It was a terrible match. And I'm sure Richie Murphy would have been looking at that thinking they, like, even though one of them is away from home at Welford Road, there is the opportunity for them to pick up two wins there.
Yeah, I think on that, it's very hard to be non-competitive as a player or coach, isn't it? But then it's the coach's job to be very objective on what can actually be achieved. And when you're looking at that group, because I have it in front of me here, like 0 points with Exeter and Sharks are on five, Leicester on six. You know, it's very, very difficult to see how they'll go through without running themselves out of steam, like Burchess said. You know, like you fight really hard to get two wins there. With bonus points, then you might go through. You fight really hard to go through next week and still lose it, and now you're under severe pressure, possible injuries, sore bodies, management behind the scenes. But it's always I find it hard for, you know, a professional outfit to go into something knowing they're underpowered. And sometimes maybe, you know, I think there's ones if a guy's performing and the guy that he could replace kind of is too important or might need a rest. And you can throw the dice on a fella knowing he'll give you something back with a bit of motivation. They're lovely ones to be able to change, but wholesale changes could be damaging as well. It's just interesting with Richie Murphy before we run out of time. If Mark Sexton is going north, I just think it adds again to the kind of the idea around Richie Murphy and what he's building and who he is, you know, because there's a certain draw to him at the moment with bringing younger players that he's coached all mad to play for him. Obviously, with opportunity as well, by the way, but like it just feels like he gets a massive amount of buy-in, and maybe that whole player management, people management is completely true, you know, because I don't know what he's like behind the scenes. I barely know him. I've spoken to him a few times, but I think if he can get a coach recruitment like that as well, then maybe, you know, Ulster is the exciting project Birch is talking about, and they really are building, but their approach in the next couple of weeks will be tough. If they come out of that with more injuries, we saw what they were like with some injuries. If they start trending the other way again, the URC becomes a massive battle again.
Yeah, it is interesting to see the long-term approach of what he's doing there and what he's kind of building together piece by piece, Bernard.
Yeah, and Jimmy Duffy, obviously, I worked with him under 20s as well. And I went off to Western Force, and now he's part of that. Like, you need coaches, I think, who actually are used to working with young players. You know, in Ulster, because you know they brought in Augustus, they still have, you know, experienced guys like Stockdale and Henderson and Herring, etc. But the reality is, the future of Ulster is that academy. And we're already seeing guys now 22, 23 who look like they have it. But if Sexton goes there, Richie's obviously a huge background in developing players through under 20s. As I said, Jimmy Duffy has done that in both pro and underage. And yeah, they've got a great stadium, great fan base. Like, Ulster is an exciting project if everything is aligned, and there's a plan there. And it certainly seems that Richie's hit the ground running for his first big head coach job. I think going in there last year and getting him into Europe, from a tricky spot, and what we've seen this year, the ups and downs, but never panicking and being transparent around what they're trying to do. It's been a good start by him.
Final point on the podcast. Tom O'Toole, 6 week suspension for that red card against Munster. That's a 6 week suspension, even with the mitigation factored in. Harsh call or fair call?
Harsh. I think it's only harsh if you went by the letter of the law, and all these disciplinary hearings, then maybe that needs to be the standard. But you can't punish Tom O'Toole like that and not punish some of the other stuff we've seen. I just think the mitigation around bans has just been so frustrating. Like, you don't know what's coming up. Everyone's getting 50%. It's not 50% if everyone's getting it. Like, then it's just not the then it's not the
Then
standard.
it's just the standard ban.
Absolutely. So
You're 6 weeks down to three. Take another one off for tackle skill.
yeah, if you saw that clear out or tackle without another body in it, I wouldn't expect to see someone get 6 weeks these days, or 6 games, or 6 weeks. Like, it just still doesn't happen. You still get it reduced by a certain amount, and there's more mitigation that he's not the only person in that clear out. So I think it's harsh. As much as I'm for the disciplinary action to keep players safe, and I would be very for that, I can't see how they've come to this conclusion based on the other hearings.
Birch.
Yeah, I think it's very harsh on him. I just see Latu's been actually cited, the La Rochelle hooker, for what I feel is a worse in the side at the weekend against Toulouse. So he may be unavailable for La Rochelle against Leinster, which would be a big blow for La Rochelle. But for Tom O'Toole, I think he's a scapegoat. I think there's obviously been a bit of a chat saying, look, they need to go harder on this type of clear out, and he's a complete outlier. I think he's so I'd be interested if they appeal it. But I think it's very harsh, unless they're going to be really consistent from now on. And then he's just it's not hard, it's hard on him then, but at least it'll be clear. But at the moment, it just seems to be out of line with what we're seeing elsewhere.
Yeah, certainly that it just did feel like worth bringing up. And obviously we'll get news on Mac Hansen if he has a suspension a little bit later on as well. Probably nothing we can really say on that matter until you actually hear something on it. Fellas, that's where we'll leave it. That's it for this week's podcast. My thanks to Bernard and Johnny. A reminder that Munster and Saracens is live on RT2 and RT Player on Saturday evening. Coverage from 4:45 p.m., 5:30 p.m. kickoff. And there's also radio commentary of La Rochelle against Leinster on Sunday Sport on RT Radio 1. We'll be back next week, probably a little bit later in the day on Wednesday, due to the Six Nations squad being announced. And we'll speak to you then.